We're here today in an interview with one of the authors of the recently released book Chicana Power and the Struggle Forest Lawn. Chicana Power is primarily authored by Chicana revolutionaries who are locked up in California's prison system. They wrote this book as part of a study group led by the Maoist prisoner support organization, MIM Prisons. The comrade we're interviewing today is one of the imprisoned authors, joining us via telephone straight from the belly of the beast. The book was published in fall 2015 by Curse Plebidub Publishers and is available at leftwingbooks.net or by writing to MIM Prisons at P.O. Box 40799, San Francisco, California, 94140. We're so glad to have this author with us today to talk about Chicana Power and the Struggle Forest Lawn, so let's get to the interview. Comrade, can you start with an overview of the contents of Chicana Power? Is it appropriate to call it a handbook for making revolution in the United States a reality?
Well, I wouldn't say, I don't think it should be used as a handbook for revolution, which might be what some people might look at it as, but more as an educational text with which Raza can begin the struggle towards transformation from Chicano gangbangers to Chicano revolutionaries. And I'm well aware that maybe not everyone will become a revolutionary in the strictest sense, but at least to elevate people's consciousness so that they know that, you know, first of all, that there is a Chicano nation, that it exists and it needs to be liberated. Chicano Power and the Struggle for Aztlan as an educational tool will hopefully help Chicanos to not only understand the correct political lines concerning the liberation of Aztlan, but will also help them become more aware of their true national identity, which lies outside of the American nation. Of course, the book Chicano Power also introduces the Chicano masses to revolutionary science and the revolutionary traditions that were largely responsible for putting that science to use, most notably the Soviet and Chinese experiments in socialism. The book also goes into critiquing various forms of Chicano nationalism, which some Chicanos tend to mistake for liberatory ideologies of cultural and narrow nationalism that when put into practice actually lend themselves to supporting oppressive structures such as American imperialism. It features a brief historical synopsis of the Chicano nation. It also gets into some more contemporary topics, such as Chicanos' participation in the democratic process in the United States today, as far as speaking on contemporary presidential candidate. There's also some book reviews in there, covering a wide variety of aspects, critiquing the RCP's line on the Chicano nation and other oppressed nations, some cultural nationalist reviews in there, our position on where the Chicano nation is right now and where it needs to go in the future. So I would say that is the brief synopsis of what's in there.
You mentioned the transition from gangbangers to revolutionaries that you hope this book will inspire. That's a path that you personally are familiar with. Could you speak on your development from gangbanger to revolutionary to author?
I really began my little journey like every other Chicano here, you know. I was oblivious to the fact that there was even a Chicano nation to begin with. Like most other Chicanos in here, you know, I started off categorizing myself as a Mexican. I came to prison for anti-people activity, gangbanging. The first few years, I was just kind of trying to lay low and just stay out of trouble and just, you know, I mean, if something came along on my little journey, then I would do it as far as if I would be asked to do any kind of negative action. But I think after a few years, I really just became disillusioned with everything. I realized that everything that I knew or that I thought I knew as a youngster, I mean, for the most part, everything was a lie. I would say that's really where my political development probably started, in a sense, as far as I knew that I didn't want this no more. I knew that this kind of life wasn't leading anywhere, and remembering bringing pain to my family, bringing pain to others, and I didn't want that anymore. At a certain point, I decided that, you know, this when the SNY yards first came into being in the early 2000s, even though they were around much longer than that, this is when they really started being used in the prison system in California. SNY yard stands for sensitive needs yard, the modern day equivalent of California protective custody yard. So for people that can't walk the main line, they end up over here. Everyone just does their own thing. You don't got to follow another man's orders as far as another inmate. I think that was a big part of motivating me to come to this side. Once on this side, for the first few years, I was all about just doing me. I wasn't worried about anybody, just trying to do my time and kind of just take it slow and easy. And I really wasn't political at all. And so, I believe it was around the time the invasion of Iraq by the American government. And I think that's around that time, that's when I kind of started being politicized. And it really just started seeing everything on TV, seeing the bombing, seeing people dying, seeing the suffering going on over there, it wasn't hard to tell why the U.S. was there. And like I said, I wasn't political, but at that point, I could at least see that. So simultaneously, around the same time, I just happened to have a cellmate who was real, real, real anti-American. I wouldn't say he was a communist. I would label him as a fan of Mao. And he claimed the mantle of Mao, and he claimed to be a communist. Up to that point, I never met anyone like that. And so, you know, through discussions on certain topics and world affairs, politics, just through watching the news, slowly but surely, I kind of started opening my eyes a little bit more. At some point, he just so happened to share the Mao's Internationalist Movement 10-point program. When I first read it, I thought it was a pretty egalitarian program, and all the stuff on there looked good, you know, and I remember reading it and thinking, man, you know, why can't all governments or, you know, all people be on that same trip? It seemed like pretty easy stuff to implement, so why not? And so then I guess I kind of started asking myself, well, why not? At that point, he introduced me to, I believe he shared with me some old MIM notes as well. This is back when MIM notes were still being printed out. I liked everything they had to say. I agreed with everything they had to say. And I ended up getting my own subscription. And around then, I wrote MIM. I asked them for some beginner's materials on Marxism. I remember they sent me a pretty complicated book on Marx, an introduction to his philosophy. Even though I understood some of it, I didn't understand a lot of it. And I really struggled a lot with that text. And I had to read it maybe 3-4 times over the period of a few months just to really start absorbing the essence of what Marx was speaking to. I was doing that for a minute. I was starting to collect little so-called revolutionary books here and there. At that time, MIM wrote me, and they invited me to a study group on Contradiction by Mao Zedong. I kind of just went from there. I would say the turning point was when I got hooked up with Ibadi and when I was invited to participate in the Aslan study group. This was another first for me, as I had never met or heard anyone that called themselves a Chicano revolutionary nationalist, nor was I aware that there was such a thing. And basically, from working with Ibadi and struggling with him, as well as with MIM prisons, I slowly but surely came to realize my own mission, which is that of the Chicano national liberation struggle for self-determination in alliance with the Third World Communist Movement. I wouldn't have worked on this project if I thought I'd be doing it at the service. In other words, I had to first feel comfortable enough with my own level of political development to have worked on it. Secondly, and this perhaps a more correct reason for agreeing to work on it, was my realization that I was not a Mexicano, but a Chicano. Therefore, I think part of my subjective drive in working on this project came more from a desire of wanting to spread the revolutionary word throughout all Aslan, as well as the fact that only through a completion of national liberation struggles can a socialist project ever succeed. And so I thought I had the tools enough to contribute to the project, so it was something I really thought I needed to do in order to just do my part to contribute to the liberation of Aslan.
This book has been well received by those who have gotten it, even though it's been censored at various prisons across the United States. To prisoners, the book is being sent for free from MIM prisons with study questions, and they're coordinating a study group through the mail between the readers and the authors. What overall impact do you think Chicana Power and the Struggle for Aztlan and the study group will have on the Chicana Nation?
I think the book and the study group that MIM prisons is doing, I think it will be the jumping off point for Chicano lumping in here in many respects. I know there's probably so many Chicano masses that subscribe to Under Lock and Key, and they're probably not all too politically developed. Some are. Some are beginning to think about some of the questions and some of the topics that we touch on in Chicano Power and the Struggle for Aztlan. I think that group is going to help them understand what we're really speaking to in the book, which is Chicano liberation and self-determination, and the only way to accomplish this is under a Maoist flag. I think from there, we can expect to see a lot of those same people hopefully continue their studies, either through MIM prisons or through their own organizations or just on their own. But I think that's really where it's going to start as far as this book coming out. But as far as the project goes, it's something that's been a long time coming, and that should have been done a long time ago. Thankfully, MIM prisons were there to, you know, fill that void where other people were failing. I mean, there's a few Chicano organizations that they claim to be revolutionary, other internationalists or so-called internationalist organizations, and they really just pay a lot of lip service. They believe writing an article on a certain topic and just making some kind of statement, you know, that they believe all people should be free or something, they think that's internationalism. But I think MIM prisons really showed us what internationalism is, which is comrades reaching out to each other, helping each other, and assisting each other, and helping us build ourselves up, you know, realizing that many prisoners, you know, even a lot of revolutionary prisoners, are still, I think, at a something of a low level of political development, you know, just because of our own conditions. And I think Men Prisons has done an excellent job with that. So as far as the book goes, I think it's really going to uplift Aztlan. It's going to help educate people. It's going to help educate the Chicano masses behind prison walls. Because people in general, especially in prison, are just consumed with the bourgeois ideology, you know. It's just all about me, doing me, making money, and that's it. And help everybody else. There's a lot of people, at least from my experience, who read any kind of revolutionary literature. I think they read it, and as they read it, they're kind of studying it. They're soaking up ideas and stuff like that. But I don't really think they take the time and really go in depth into the text as with the Men Prisons run study programs where, you know, comrades have the opportunity to engage with Men Prisons and with other comrades and with each other on a variety of questions, you know, concerning not only prisoners, but the international communist movement as well. You know, I was completely ignorant to a lot of this stuff until I started working with Men Prisons and Sibadmi. So I really just think this book is gonna mark a new level of development in Aztlan for the Chicano masses. I would hope that in the next coming years, we really begin to see an upsurge in the Chicano masses and prisons and really, you know, not just getting conscious, but actually building on that consciousness by organizing. There's so many things that I think that could be done in here. And I think, as we all know, at least Chicano prisoners, you know, the key to peace on the streets is peace in the prisons. And I think for us to have peace on the streets and for the Chicano liberation movement to really begin organizing out there, it has to start in the prisons.
Could you speak more on that relationship between peace building behind prison walls and peace on the streets outside of prison?
Well, I can't speak for other nationalities, but as far as for the Chicano lumpen, for the gangbangers out there, I think a lot of stuff that goes on the streets is controlled by what goes on in prison. At the flip of a switch, the lumpen chiefs right here, they can organize a peace treaty on the streets. I mean, they've done it before when I was out there. You know, everything stopped virtually overnight. From warring and killing and drive-bys to virtually overnight, hey, that's it, we're done. And that's the kind of power they have, and I don't see no reason why Chicano revolutionaries can't have that same power, especially when it's power that's going to help the whole of Aztlan. It's going to help all Chicanos out there, first by bringing peace and unity in here and a lot into the streets. I think we can expect a lot of Chicano revolutionaries in here to begin organizing as well. And I think right now there's really just small pockets of comrades, you know, here and there. You might bump into one person here. You might bump into another person there. You might go to another yard or another prison, and there's no one there. You're the only one there. And I think as time goes on, we're going to start seeing a lot more conscious people stepping up to the plate and deciding that, you know, they're done with the old ways, and they're going to begin organizing for Chicano liberation.
It seems like your move to the SNY played a big part in your political development. Could you speak more on special needs yards, their role, and history?
Concerning the SNY yard, I would say these are, for the most part, creations of CDC who have utilized certain methods of warfare, such as divide and conquer tactics against Aztlan within the prison setting. Initially, I believe by both removing prison leaders from the mainline that knew how to provide stability and order to the lumpen organizations, as well as by purposely integrating certain individuals who they know will act in an opposite manner, creating instability and disorder to a previously quote-unquote stable environment. I think most people coming from a mainline end up on SNY due to prison politics. You know, it could be something minor, from maybe hanging out with different nationalities a little too much, to something maybe a little bit more major, as in stepping into the prison political arena and attempting to exert some kind of influence. But I also think a lot of people just, and this is also something I'm starting to see more and more, is a lot of people are just coming over here just because they're just getting tired of the things going on over there. I think a lot of people come over due to those main factors right there. So I think connected to the SNY yards, I believe this is also partly connected to the creation of the shoes. Because, I mean, before the shoes, there were no SNY yards, you know. So I think how they're connected is the fact that when CDC started taking certain leadership off of the yards, it created a power vacuum where you had certain individuals having power struggles and things of that nature, which in turn opened up the door for the SNY yards to be created or to be widened, because I believe there was maybe only one or two in the past, and like within the last 15 or 20 years, becoming the majority within California prisons.
It's pretty amazing that this book was authored by a group of people together through the mail, some of them locked up in isolation cells for years. Could you speak on what that whole experience was like, some challenges and interesting aspects of that process?
Well, firstly, I think working on Chicano power and the struggle for Aztlan was definitely a learning experience as far as working on a book through the mail. You know, it seemed something like a monumental task at the time when I was first invited to participate, but I was also very excited about it. As far as learning about the various steps it took to actually write and publish the book, it was a learning experience in that respect. But more importantly, I think the lessons I learned were about my own subjective power and ability to reach out to the Chicano lumpen behind prison walls. I think it was the very fact that I'm incarcerated, which allowed me to write from the imprisoned Chicano perspective, which is, after all, our target audience. Therefore, I think the fact that I am incarcerated helps the book carry a certain level of legitimacy amongst the oppressed Chicano prison masses, not because of some supposed notoriety as a convict or anything like that, but because the Chicano masses will see that me and our co-authors are writing both from a perspective very similar to their own. I think the only real challenge was just a lack of access to a variety of research materials. Although Men Prisons did an excellent job of assisting me, I can't help but think what more could I have contributed to this project if I had more access to information, you know, mainly the internet, or at least just more books, just more research material. I always thought I was lacking in that regard, especially because I think I was still pretty new to the whole Chicano National Liberation Movement, you know. And so a lot of what I contributed was stuff that I learned with Men Prisons and through my interaction with Cipatli. I think that was the only real challenge, just a lack of more information.
Finally, what do you see as some of the main challenges to organizing the prison population?
I don't think there's too many Chicanos out there right now that are really tripping on this whole, revolutionary politics or socialism or anything like that. A lot of Chicanos in here are caught up in the whole cultural nationalist thing, and they're more worried about keeping traditions alive and following our own culture and not letting our people be absorbed by the new American culture. From my experience, these types of beliefs are most commonly found in the over 30 crowd in the California prison system. Most of these people who have spent the majority of their sentences on mainline yards, something that I have begun to take more note of, is that these younger generations of Chicano prisoners who have begun to enter the system seem to be more Americanized. And what I mean by this is that many younger generations seem to not have either the knowledge or the desire to learn about their culture, which is a oppressed nation's culture. Many Chicanos these days seem to identify first and foremost as Americans, who on occasion will even spit out certain American chauvinistic beliefs. They also don't understand a lick of Spanish. I think this is problematic for the Chicano nation as far as the Spanish language helps many Chicanos to identify, or at least to find common ground with other raza. Last but not least, I think today's Chicanos also seem to be more consumed by a capitalistic society that is also integral to the white American nation and culture. And what I mean by this is that younger Chicano prisoners today seem to be more consumed by money than previous generations. So the comparison would be that while on the main line, there's a very strong sense of unity and cultural identity amongst Chicanos, which functions in a positive way by introducing imprisoned Chicanos to various aspects of a national identity outside of America. Whereas on SNY yard, this function is largely missing. However, I think this is where Chicano power and the struggle for Islam will help to fill some of the voids left by the mainland experience by introducing or reintroducing for the very first time aspects of Chicano culture and identity which many Chicanos may have previously been ignorant of. Therefore, Chicano power and the struggle for Islam will, I think, hopefully help to uplift the Chicano nation from a Maoist perspective.
Thank you for speaking with us today. We're so glad to have gotten the chance to do this interview and talk more about this important book. Again, the book is Chicana Power and the Struggle for Aztlan. It's written by a MIM prison study group and is available at leftwingbooks.net. Prisoners can get the book for free by writing to MIM Prisons at P.O. Box 40799, San Francisco, California, 94140. In Struggle, en Lucha.